Welcome. Germany is out of the World Cup. Can you believe it? If you can't, we're here to break down the reasons for Germany's World Cup exit after digesting their disappointing result against South Korea. What does this World Cup mean for Joachim Löw? Was this his last major tournament with the German national team? And with the defending champions out, who are the favorites now to win the whole thing? This is the World Cup from the Tribune. Davis van Opdorp here with Ali Farad. Haven't had him on the podcast for a while, but it seems like a good time to bring him back because, Ali, yes. Germany are out of the World Cup.
And big surprise.
Big, I mean, something that I don't think anybody predicted. And maybe with the four of the last five champions that went out of the World Cup, maybe that was unpredictable as well. What are your initial thoughts on this? Because, I mean, there's a lot of narratives that we could start with, going from even from front to back. But what is the thing that stuck out from you after basically ingesting this result also for a few more hours and over for a half a day after it actually happened?
I think it's deserved. It's basically deserved. If you look at the three games they had against Mexico, against Sweden, and then against South Korea, they weren't in a position, I mean, they sometimes dominate the game, but they weren't in a position where they were really, really dangerous. We saw it against Mexico, they lost. We saw it against Sweden, they won, but it was really difficult for them. And against South Korea, they weren't able to score and to put a real pressure on South Korea. So it was, yeah.
It is somewhat unfathomable that that in two of the group stage games that Germany did not score a goal, considering how much attacking talent that, I mean, even though the Leroy Sané did not go along, which is another reason why people say that Germany didn't have the right players on the field, but it's not like they didn't have attacking talent. I mean, Marco Reus is a prolific goal scorer. Thomas Müller is as well. Of course, Thomas Müller didn't start, but even someone like Leon Goretzka, he did extremely well as a goal scorer in the Confederations Cup, and yet in two of those three games, they didn't score any goals.
Yeah, it's probably because with time, rivals learn how to defend against those type of game, like the possession game of Germany. Like it was. Also, the fact it was also the case, for example, in European football, in Champions League, how teams defended well again with time against Guardiola's football at Barcelona, but also at Bayern Munich, or now sometimes at Manchester City. Football evolves every day, and so people are just adapting to what they have. Of course, it was clear since the beginning that Germany has had the better squad, the better players to create chances and probably to score goals. But the other teams, they adapt themselves, and they knew how to work against this Germany.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because we've seen that a lot in this World Cup, that we see a lot of teams often playing against the ball. I mean, I'm not saying that hasn't happened in group stages in the past, but I mean, Iceland, for example, in the Euros, they one of the reasons why they rose to success is because they had this plan against the ball and they were able to counter quickly. And I mean, Mexico exited perfectly when they're in that first game with Carlos Vela marking Toni Kroos and with Miguel Ayun playing out wide. And I mean, South Korea did the exact same thing, staying in a 4-4-2 and basically compressing the space that Germany was working on. But I'm curious what you think about this, because that one of the things that I saw a lot of people say was that Germany was just so timid and so careful. One of the German announcer was saying how careful Germany was being. Did Germany need to be much braver against South Korea than they were?
I think they were. It was really weird, actually, because the way how Germany played yesterday was basically like the play against they played against Mexico and against Sweden, but it was really, really slow. It was really, really slow, and this time they couldn't find any solution, any holes they could exploit or something. It was like, I don't know, it was like every gesture of German players was really, really good studied by South Korean players and staff. And we have to give them that they outplayed it really, really good. And yeah, the fact that Germany couldn't exploit this, I mean, it has also to do with what Toni Kroos said. Toni Kroos said after the game, we didn't realize that we had to play a final. And that's why, because that's the reason why we lost, actually. Because they weren't in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to stay in the half of South Korea, but they weren't really in a hurry. They were like, let's put some pressure and see what happens. But it was basically always the same. You had a cross from of Kimmich,
so
from
many Kimmich, crosses
from Kimmich here, no destination, or Timo Werner here and there, but not in the center. Crosses from Hector, passes from Kroos and Özil through the defense, which didn't work out. They had no other solution. It was a little bit as it was stereotyped.
Yeah. I mean, you saw how many passes Özil just in the final third. I mean, I don't even know if he even had a key pass in that game, just because, I mean, all of his passes when he was trying to make that final ball, there was always someone there. And credit to South Korea for putting the bodies in the way. I mean, their holding midfielders performed extremely well, but at the same time, this is Mesut Özil, supposedly one of the best playmakers in the world, and he can't get a final pass off in against South Korea.
That's another problem, I think, because a statistic came out yesterday. Mesut Özil is the player which created more chances in this World Cup by. I mean, if you count every team and every player, he's the guy who created more chances. The problem is with Mesut Özil that if someone doesn't score, Mesut Özil won't be valued for what he did.
Right. And
for example, yesterday his cross for Hummels was perfect.
That's true.
It was perfect. The only thing that Hummels had to do is put a header. He didn't do it. He shot with his shoulder. But the thing is, what could Mesut Özil do more than that?
Yeah.
I mean, it was the conditions were perfect to score a goal, and it's not the only key pass he did. The problem is, if someone doesn't concretize the work of Mesut Özil before a pass or something, so Mesut Özil won't be valued.
Right. There's also, I mean, to Mesut Özil's credit, there was also a lot of times where he was kind of left to kind of create a shot for himself. There was, I think, two or three instances where it was just nobody was making the right runs or making the timed runs that he needed to kind of get that final pass off. And he was left to try at the edge of the penalty area with the ball, trying to create something because... I mean, all credit to Timo Werner and the season that he had with Leipzig over the last 2 years and what he's done with the German national team in the Confederations Cup. But he was not the right person to be up front for Germany. I mean, it was indicative that you mentioned Mats Hummels had to come forward probably at the hour mark because they had no other person in the penalty area that was really doing anything, even when Mario Gomez came on.
Yeah, but with Mario Gomez, it changed a little bit because Mario Gomez was basically staying in the penalty area. The difference with Werner, we watch the Bundesliga, we watch every game of the Bundesliga, and we know that Timo Werner has another profile. He has the profile of a guy which uses spaces, which need to do something with his pace because he's really fast. But when you are confronting a defense which is so compact and so solid, you have no spaces. So naturally, Werner was searching for spaces. That's why he played on the left or on the right, because he had no spaces in the middle, because he couldn't. He wasn't fitting in this system, and that's the problem. Maybe.
Yeah. Let's get on to Joachim Löw, because he used 20 different players. Almost used his entire squad throughout this entire World Cup, and never seemed to find the right answer. He made 5 changes from the Sweden game to the South Korea game, including benching Thomas Müller and putting Sami Khedira and Mesut Özil back in the lineup. How much he says he's taking full responsibility for this? How much responsibility do you give him for the result that Germany just put in?
It's a little bit complicated because we are not inside the team.
Right.
So I think the decisions of Löw, he never takes, I think, his decisions alone. He has a player council with Jérôme Boateng, Mats Hummels, Manuel Neuer, Sami Khedira. Of course, he has the last word, and his last word yesterday was to put Khedira and Özil back. But the thing is, Khedira wasn't probably fit for this tournament. But I think Özil tried what he could, but the problem is, because he's so talented, we expect so much from him. But the thing is, he's just playing his game and trying to do something. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. I don't know. It's a little bit complicated. Like, Löw, of course, he has full responsibility for it. But I don't think that just... It's not only about Khedira and Özil. It could be also about, for example, why he didn't start with Julian Brandt,
right,
for example, or why...
Do you think Julian Brandt should have started at least one of these games?
Maybe the last one, okay, because he showed so much in 30 minutes, I think, 10 against Mexico and 20 against Sweden, that he should have deserved more minutes, maybe a half, maybe not in the beginning, but maybe a half, so he can... He could be profiting from the fact that the defenders are a little bit tired or something, and with his pace, he could have done more, I think. The other thing is, like we said, in such a game, when you know that you are going to press on the other team in its half, maybe you should have someone like Gomez instead of Werner, because Werner had no space, and Mario Gomez can work in this position. I mean, and Mario Gomez is always useful. Mario Gomez, or another number 9, is always useful when he has to work against defenders. It's always good for a team to have someone like him. And also, because when you have a Mario Gomez, even if he's not that good in the air, he's good, but he's not a reference in the world football. You can use the qualities of a Kimmich or a Hector, for example, better than yesterday with a Werner or a Marco Reus in the center when Werner decided to go left or right.
Yeah. So since we're on the squad, I'm curious what you think. Do you think Germany had the right squad at the World Cup? There was a lot of talked about the depth that Germany has going into this tournament. Do you think the right players were in the squad? I know this is kind of hindsight is 2020, but at this point, that's pretty kind of what the mode that we're in is, basically looking at things in hindsight.
The problem is, I think, I don't know. Probably, I mean, people would have preferred to see Leroy Sané in this team. But the thing that we don't know and will never know is, would Sané have done something? We can't affirm that, because we don't know how. I mean, when he played the 2 last friendlies with Germany, he wasn't that good, and we have no idea if he would have fitted in this team. But more And that calls something else. It's also like, if Sané would have been there, would he have been able to save this team alone? I'm not sure about it. And I think the problem wasn't just the squad, the players, their capacities, but more, I think it was more a mental thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think the mentality didn't fit, but the problem is, which kind of player would you have taken to have a better mentality in this team?
Right. I mean, it's interesting because the two players that obviously before the tournament started were the notable omissions were Sandro Wagner and Leroy Sané. We've talked about Leroy Sané a lot. Sandro Wagner, I think, would have been an interesting player because he is a player that can win balls in the air, and he's kind of, that's one of the best things that he's good at. But I think it's clear that it's really a personality thing as to why he wasn't included into the team. And judging by the way that he reacted to being omitted from the team, I mean, it kind of proved Löw right in a way. But yeah, I really don't know who else could have made this team better, because you saw, I mean, Toni Kroos definitely was one of their best players. He wasn't at the Confederations Cup, but came back. Sami Khedira, I think one could argue, I mean, it was clear that had Sebastian Rudy not broken his nose, I think that Löw would have played him again in this game. You couldn't really make a reasonable argument for Löw not including Thomas Müller in the team, considering that he had won the Golden Boot before, almost won the Golden Boot 4 years ago. I really don't know who else you could have maybe swapped in, or who else would have been a better option than the team that they already have. Now, speaking of Löw, what do you think happens with him now? Because Oliver Bierhoff came out afterwards and said that basically Löw signed a contract. They have not had any thoughts of letting him go. Reinhard Gündel, the head of the DFB, said something similar. Löw himself has kind of left his future open. Do you think Löw should continue with this team?
If he has to continue, he has to change a lot of things.
What do you think needs to change particularly?
He needs to put some confidence in other players. He had some lieutenants which are there since 2010, like Sami Khedira, Mesut Özil. The thing is, he has to accept that those guys, he can't be the guys that he had to, not to put his trust on, but like he has to find new leaders. He has to find leaders now, and he has to change his approach also, because if he's going to go to the Euro 2020 and then probably also to the World Cup in 2024, it's going to be complicated for him if he doesn't change his style of play, and if he doesn't change his mentality. If he decides to stay, he has also to take full responsibility and see about himself what didn't work.
Right.
And that's the thing. On the other hand, if Joachim Löw doesn't continue, I don't know who could replace him.
True.
Not because I think there is no other solution, but because I really don't know. I really don't know who is going to take this team and try to perpetuate the work of the DFB in Germany at the international level. I have no idea. Right now, I couldn't say. People could always say, yeah, but they have so many talented coaches like Jürgen Klopp, Thomas Tuchel, Julian Nagelsmann, and so on. But the problem is with those guys, they have contracts in their clubs. And the other thing is, they are probably not ready to take a national team, which is a complete
completely different. Yeah.
So right now I have no idea. Probably, I don't know. A probability could be that the same thing as 2006 will happen, which is like a kind of a nobody would come, and it will be his assistant, Thomas Schneider.
Mm. Yeah, Thomas Schneider was an interesting name, I think, because there's a lot of analytics that actually goes on in the Germany team at the moment. I mean, I think that on an interim basis, if Löw decides to leave, Horst Rubesch probably wouldn't be a terrible option, considering how much success he had with the under 21s at the Olympics. It's technically under 23, and at the under 21 Euros last year. I think on an interim basis that could work. But yeah, I think you're totally right. It would have to be an assistant, but I wouldn't, if I was Germany, I mean, you're not going to fire Löw. He is going to leave on his own terms, not only because he has a contract, but also because he's been with Germany for more than a decade. I still think he has a very, from the people that I've talked to, he still is a very popular figure in the Germany team. Now Löw has also talked about going back into club football as well on his own. So maybe that'll be a blessing in disguise if he does end up taking that route. I understand that who knows who the next Germany coach would be, but I also am of the mind that maybe for Germany at this point, there was a commentary written about this yesterday. That maybe there just needs to be a fresh face. I mean, I think in a coach's career, what Löw could obviously say, I've achieved pretty much everything that I think I could with this team. Now, the one trophy that's missing from his cabinet is obviously a Euros, but he's won a Confederations Cup with a team that wasn't expected to win. He's won a World Cup also, I would say, with a team that wasn't expected to win, also because there hadn't been a team from Europe that had ever won on South American soil. There's really not much more that he could do with this team that would improve his legacy with Germany. So I really wouldn't be surprised if he decided to say, you know what, that's pretty much it for me. But I do think that would be right now would be best for Germany. And I'm curious. I don't know if this actually is true. I have no information in this direction, but I'm curious if there are some in the DFB that are kind of hoping that he steps down, just so they can kind of get a new set of ideas and get this next generation, move on from the older players, the older leaders, like you said, and get in this, because there is a kind of a generation in waiting, so to say. I mean, Jonathan Tah wasn't included in this team. There's so many young players. I mean, Julian Brandt, like you said, we should have played more. Lior Sané wasn't included in this team. Leon Goretzka only made one start. Nicolas Sulo only made one start. I mean, there's so many young players in their early 20s that I think are almost at the point where they can take over that mantle from the older teams, and they still have these good influences on top of them that will help them, that can kind of bequeath them the team. So I really don't think it would be the worst thing in the world if Joachim Löw stepped down. I think that honestly, I think that would be the best option for Germany right now. Of course, I'm saying this a day after they lost in the group stage. But when something like this happens, you saw it with Vicente Dabotsky. A few years ago. I mean, he did go on to coach the Euros, but after that was it. I mean, he was one of he's the greatest Spanish coach of all time, but even he knew when it was time for him to step away. So, and I think Löw might be at that point too, if I were to speculate.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, if Löw has to go, he has to go for the good reason. And the good reason won't be only, yeah, we were lost in the group stage. There are other reasons, I think. Like, for example, I had a message, I couldn't bring it to the players. Because it's like, yeah, if it has to be some reasons for him to
play. You know, some people also, I saw some people on Twitter saying that Löw couldn't communicate with the younger generation. Therefore, and you could see that in his squad selection. He won the Confederations Cup last year. Of course, there's not as many people with the, and not as many teams in that tournament were in the World Cup, but he won the Confederation Cup last year with a really young, with a rather young team. So I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a generational thing. I think that is an assumption. Maybe there's something internal that I don't know, but I wouldn't jump to that conclusion that he can't communicate with the younger generation. But I think there's going to be another reason if he were to step down in order to do that.
The other thing is also everything that we can see right now about Germany is like a little bit exaggerated because we are not used to it.
Right.
We are just not used to it. It's like after Germany won 7-1 against Brazil, it was Brazil was the pettiest team which is it has ever given in football.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, the worst team is, yeah.
Yeah, the worst team ever. I mean, they are 5-time world champions. So, okay, those players maybe weren't that good, but to say that Brazil was the worst of all time.
It was the worst Brazil team of all time. Yeah, that was a little hyperbolic.
It's a little bit exaggerating. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, all what we see right now, all those questions, why it didn't work, what is going to happen in the future. It's like a little bit exaggerated because, I mean, Germany is basically very stable in their history. Germany, it's the first time they are out in the group stage, but I mean, how many finals or semifinals did they play already? Or for example, another thing, people probably don't know about that, but Germany has more than 110 years of football history. Joachim Löw is only the 10th manager, only the 10th one, only the 10th manager in their history.
Mm-hmm.
Look how stable it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah. But if you look at the stability, I mean, they are the fourth team in the last five World Cups. The fourth champion, I should say, in the last five World Cups to get eliminated from the group stage. Why do you think that is? Is it the pressures of modern football? Is it the, I'm assuming it's for various different reasons, but what are your thoughts on that?
I think the explanations are different from a team to another. For example, I can take the example of France because I'm French. When we won the World Cup in 98 and then the Euros in 2000, we were like invincible. We saw ourselves like invincible. And also because we won some games during this period with a golden goal, like Paraguay in the round of 16 in 98, or the Euro final against Italy also. We thought that nothing could happen to us. So we went to the World Cup in 2002. We were very, very confident because we had more or less the same team than the same structure like in 98 and 2000. Plus we had Zinedine Zidane. Plus we had Thierry Henry, top goal scorer in the Premier League this year. Djibril Cissé, top goal scorer in France that year, plus David Trezeguet, top goal scorer in the Serie A with Juventus.
Mm-hmm.
How many goals did we score? Nil. So it depends from a team to another. I think for France it was like overconfident. The reason why, if you speak about that in France, people would say, yeah, but it's because Zidane injured himself in a friendly before. So that's our excuse. We hadn't Zidane for the two first games.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you can't resume a football team to just a player, even if he's amazing.
Yeah,
like I said, we had a lot of top goal scorers, and this team was called Neil.
Yeah.
Not a single goal. So for us, it was probably we were overconfident. For Italy and Spain, I don't know exactly, but I would say that when you're world champion and you come to the World Cup, everyone wanna beat you.
That's true.
That's a competition. It's not just modern football. It's like you're motivated. You're over motivated. Because sometimes it's like when you are a smaller nation in the football scene, you know that it's an occasion which wouldn't happen every day. So the thing is, like South Korea yesterday,
right? I was going to say that's a perfect example.
They were eliminated, but it was a question of honor.
Yeah.
And also
what did South Korea have to lose? I mean, if they had lost that last game, sure. But these are players that probably this might be their only chance to play at a World Cup. Now I know South Korea is consistently qualifying out of the Asian bracket, and the teams are going to get bigger. But I mean, the tournament's going to get bigger. But it's still, I mean, this was a lot of their players. A lot of the players that they had, this was their chance to be part of a World Cup, but also to shine and for their own career.
Yeah, and also for their own people. I mean, it's like, for example, everyone was like, "Yeah, Saudi Arabia is really weak, etc." In the World Cup, that's true, but if you see what Saudi Arabia did against Germany in the friendly game, the guy were over motivated,
right?
Because they really wanted to play and try to beat the world champion.
Yeah, you saw that with Costa Rica 4 years ago when they played Spain.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. I mean, it happens all the time, and yeah, the thing is, I don't know if it's just a question of overconfidence or from the world champion, or maybe big motivation from the rivals, but it must be something in between. And yeah, for I don't know exactly, but for example, the problem is also, I think, some people which are used to win can have problem to put themselves in question. That's what happened with Spain, for example. They won the Euro 2008, then the World Cup, then the Euro, and then they came to the World Cup in Brazil.
And I think Real Madrid also won. There are many of the players were in that Real Madrid team that won the Champions League as well.
Yeah, and some others in Barcelona, which won the Liga. And yeah, you have like the guys were always there. Why they didn't change the match plan? And yeah, and you are facing teams which just want to beat you,
right?
They just want to show that, yeah, they are here to beat you, and that's it.
Yeah,
and that's what happened with Spain, with Italy also twice.
Mm-hmm.
Once in
as champions.
I mean once now in the 2000s, but also after but it was in the 50s.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's another thing. And plus you had the war between it. So, but yeah, the thing is, I think there is no exact answer to this question.
Yeah.
It's a mix between what you have on the own team and what you have from the other team.
Okay.
Because yeah, to a football game, you need two teams.
Yeah. Speaking of other teams, Germany is out. Argentina squeaked through. France, despite not looking maybe at their best, to say it nicely, is they also are through, also winning their group. Croatia looked very impressive. Who do you think are now the, if give me three favorites now that the group stages are almost over? Of course, we have Group H and Group G today, but who are your favorites for the tournament the rest of the way, you think? Give me three.
I would say Brazil.
Okay. I like them too.
Then
Belgium, I think, for the first time since this golden generation era, Belgium looked like a real team that could actually challenge for something.
And actually, Belgium and England have actually the perfect draw because... the way that that the calendar is done for them is like quite perfect.
Right.
Because England, for example, we could also take Belgium, had to play against two teams which were weaker,
right.
way weaker, Tunisia and Panama. So you can start the World Cup like first step really easy. You played, for example, England played against Tunisia. It was a little bit harder. They won the last minute, but okay, they won. Then they came against Panama. They were free and played well and won 6-1. Now they are facing Belgium for the final of the group. It's good to face a team like Belgium, which is also kind of favorite. So you can see how far you are right now in this tournament. Then in the next step, they are going to face someone from the group H.
Right.
Which is kind of good because you have Japan, Senegal, and Colombia, which are facing each other for
the finals, yeah. So Senegal and Colombia are facing each other today.
Yeah, you have three teams for two places and in a really homogeneous group, except for Poland right now. So when you go out from this group, you will have another step,
mm-hmm.
which is a good team, not quite an underdog, but a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
It could be Japan, it could be Colombia, it could be Senegal. And it's a team that will give you some challenge.
Right.
And then you come to the next step and you are going to play in the quarterfinals, probably Brazil, if you're first of your group.
Yeah.
If you're England or Belgium. Or I forgot the other team, but yeah, the progression is really good because you are
yeah.
doing it step by step. And it's exactly the same with Brazil, for example. They play against Switzerland.
Well, Switzerland was in the group. They're playing against Mexico now. Yeah.
Yeah, but in the group they played, Brazil played against Switzerland. They drew, and then they played against Costa Rica. They won, and then they played against Serbia, which has no other goal except win because Serbia needed to win,
right.
and they won the game. And
yeah.
now they are going to play Mexico. It's another step for them, etc., etc. So it's like it's good when you have in this. When you can have this kind of progression in the tournament, like you go step by step and then you can progress every day.
Yeah.
Every day it's a new challenge and every day you have someone, the challenge is a little bit difficult, but in this order is quite good actually.
Yeah.
So that's why I see Brazil favorite and probably England or Belgium, but we have to check how far they will go.
And not France.
France is a little bit complicated.
Because they face Argentina in the round of round of 16, but then they would have to go on and face Uruguay. And I really like Uruguay at this tournament. I've said this on the podcast before. I'm on the Uruguay bandwagon because, I mean, I've said this. The Netherlands 4 years ago had basically two attackers, Robert Van Persie and Arjen Robben, and then they had a solid concept in defense. That got them to the semifinals. And if you look at Uruguay, they have maybe the best defensive pair in the World Cup, which not many are talking about, with Jose Jimenez and Diego Godin, of course. And I don't know. I think that if the way that the knockouts work, you saw how many games went 4 years ago went to extra time. I mean, all you really need to do is they didn't concede any goals in the group stage. The last time they did that was 2010, and they made it all the way to the semifinals. Then I really think that if France play Uruguay, That could be a really interesting matchup.
That's true, but I mean, this part of the tournament is really intriguing and interesting because you just spoke about Uruguay, but you should not forget about Portugal.
That too.
I mean, they are current European champion, and even if they don't produce a very, very funny football, it's effective, and they showed it against Spain, for example. Which they respond in the last minute with the free kick of Ronaldo. Then they struggled a little bit against they struggled a lot actually against Morocco, but they were on the lead after 5 minutes. And yeah, in the last game, the tide with Iran. But the thing is, yeah, they went second in this group, and they are never to underestimate.
Yeah, that's true. They did what they needed. They did that the Euros too. They did what they needed to do.
Yeah, of course. And it's not just a question of is Ronaldo fit or not, even if he scores the goal, etc., etc. But it's like this team is really, really complicated to play.
Yeah.
I mean, we
play against, yeah.
We had the perfect example in France for the European final. I mean,
mm-hmm.
we had everything in the hand, and yeah, at the end, we just lost
mm-hmm.
at home.
Yeah.
So we never know. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. You have some stuff. You have some games in this round of 16, which could be really exciting. Like, for example, Brazil-Mexico.
Oh, that would be great.
I mean, Mexico is probably one of the most complicated teams for Brazil to mm-hmm. play, I think, because they know each other very well.
Right.
So, yeah, Mexicans know how to deal with Brazil. They showed it in the history.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's probably not the most comfortable tie for them, for Brazil. So we have to see. And then you have some other games which could be also interesting because we just have no idea. France, Argentina, for example. Yeah. You have a team.
Sweden, like Switzerland too.
Sweden, Switzerland too, yeah. But France and Argentina, it's really weird because Argentina in the tournament, it was like a roller coaster for them. They're tied against Iceland, then they were down to earth after the loss against Croatia.
Yeah.
Then they came out of nowhere with a win against Nigeria, and then they are in the round of 16. They already lived a lot in this tournament.
Mm. Croatia's good, though. They're the definition of a dark horse, I think.
Also, yeah. And on the other hand, you have France. You have France, which is a team which showed basically nothing in this tournament.
Mm.
And it's really, really complicated to have an idea what will happen on Saturday against Argentina, because now Argentina has a kick. They are possessed by something which can bring them anywhere, maybe to the semifinals, maybe to the, we don't know. We'll see against France what will happen. But France, we just have no idea. And it's possible that we go out of this tournament without knowing if this team was good or bad.
Mm.
Not just because of the result, but just because of the potential this team had. And if you don't show your potential, it's going to be complicated to see if, yes, it was a good tournament or not.
Mm.
That's the problem. Of course, if we go out now, I don't think that Didier Deschamps will last long, but now the most important thing is we probably have to show something,
right?
To show some character, mm-hmm. which we didn't show that much in this tournament so far.
All right, that's enough World Cup talk for now. A little programming note, we aren't entirely sure when we're going to be back again. We had originally planned of doing a podcast after every Germany game, but there aren't any Germany games anymore. So this will not be our last World Cup podcast, and we might be able to get into some Bundesliga news as well. So be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. And if you do, make sure you give us some 5 stars on iTunes as well. Also, be sure to like our Tribune of Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribune of Podcast. Ali Farhat is at Der Parisier on Twitter, and I'm at Davis_Benoppler. Thanks for listening, and we hope to be back soon.